What is going on, everybody? This is Roster of the Burbank Misfits. And of course, I'm always joined with my co-host, CW.
Yes.
And you're listening to the Misfit Effect. Today, we have a very, very special guest for you today. She wrote a book. And from reading the description of it, it sounds very, very interesting. The book is called Nothing is Personal, It's Just Business. It's about the secrets of the exotic entertainment business. And it's not like your normal books where they talk about, you know, encounters they have with, you know, celebrities and people of that nature. It's more about, you know, getting inside of it, the tricks and trades, you know. It's about, you know, making it an art form, you know, and still at the same time avoiding the hazards. Without further ado, you know, we have author, educator, and all around great person from everything I've heard about her, Miss Holly Woods. How you doing today, Holly?
Thank you for what a wonderful introduction that was.
And, you know, for everything I did not say, can you please tell the world who is Holly?
Okay, well, in a gist, Holly is a performer. I started off mostly in the strip clubs doing small burlesque acts, and it kind of turned into its own little production company. I now own two pole studios, and I am invested into a dinner theater opening up early next year, 2022. Okay. And quite a journey to be able to bring this industry to the mainstream in this form.
Where is this, I'm interested in that, where is this opening up at next year?
Dinner Theater will be in Meriden, Connecticut. It's between the New Haven, Hartford, Boston, New York area. It's right in the middle of Connecticut. Okay. It's a beautiful area about right in the middle of the town, which would pretty much come access right off the highway. So I'll be giving you more information as we get closer, but we are still in construction phase.
Oh no, it just sounds like very interesting because, you know, I love when people are starting new businesses and it sounds exciting. I've never been to Connecticut myself, but it does sound like, you know, something worthwhile going to.
Well, absolutely. You know? I'll make sure you get a VIP ticket.
Hey, nice. I would make sure that this guy person right here joins me, and I will make a special trip to Connecticut, you know.
Excellent.
So let's talk about this book really quick, because what made you want to, you know, write it? Like what inspired you? What is your inspiration?
Well, I have many years and many conversations with entertainers behind the scenes about what to expect in this industry. Often it would be over really bad nights where we would have additional time to kind of like construct an exit strategy. What should we do? How much money needs to be made for the next goal? And it became too much of a week by week thing and so much like a paycheck to paycheck concept that it needed to be formulated for independent contractors who actually needed an exit strategy. And often when dancers come in this industry, they don't really have an idea of what to do to get out of it. They know how much of a goal they have, but they don't know what to do after the goal's met. So mainly we had to have these conversations and where we could really offer the industry as a brand and as an ambassador as our own, like the independent Instagram performers would be, as adult entertainers, and be able to take control of that before it turned into either adult related or something that was just so mundane that no one was interested in that brand. And it was all just coming from the independent brands of each of the dancers. There were girls and guys who were interested in figuring out how do I maximize this potential with what I have going on right now. And a lot of them became students and started to come to my classes. And then the classes turned into more of symposiums, for that matter, and educating for a bigger purposes rather than just how do I give a proper lap dance or what's not allowed in a club versus the latter.
I know that A few clubs that I've went to, I know that some performers are mainly that day just trying to make a certain amount their quota, rather than, you know, having a long-term expectation, you know. And some more so see it as, you know, a quick buck, to say, rather than looking at it as far as something that could be long-term, you know, like a long-term investment, because, you know, you are, you know, sharing yourself with other people, you know. And some people don't, how can I say this? Some people don't take the time out to really, you know, learn what is best for them in the long term, you know?
Absolutely. There's not a lot of education on, honestly, the process or really the strategy of treating it like a business. Mm-hmm. Often the dancers get really stuck into, like you said, a goal mentality. And they don't really think, okay, if I put 6 months in time and made sure I was on time, made sure that I was able to meet a specific quota just daily, that they would actually find their exit strategy a lot faster. So it often came from the negate of knowledge, where we didn't have house mom or big sister pole dancer / phenomenon who was on stage who can bring the girls through the next stages of, you know, their performance styles. But it's sort of like kind of became lackluster as far as entertainment goes. And then a lot of entertainers did not understand how to properly understand the sale behind what they were offering. So the desperation came in, and often the sale became less about dancing and about entertainment, but about whatever the customer wanted at that moment. And it was the easiest thing for them to kind of turn it into more of a reciprocal relationship rather than a customer base with a client. But we expressed a lot of these things when it came to how to find a way not to cross that level, because often, and I've seen a lot of times at the night where the clubs were getting really busy and the girls were getting really tired and they just gave up. No one wanted to dance, no one wanted to entertain. They kind of just twerked themselves into somber. And then the customers kind of expected that same thing. So the throwing of the dollars to kind of like re-wake up the girls were kind of like the thing that was happening late at night. And then here it is, the girls are counting a bunch of dollars, but then they didn't notice that I wasn't there the whole night because I was in a champagne room and I was constantly building a product within me and a brand within me that came with additional sales. And it wasn't sexual favors. It wasn't anything that was additional to my dancing and my art form. It was literally me being a brand. Mm-hmm. And so there are girls who pretty much every night, $300-$400, they're happy. But I was trying to teach them how to make $1,000 a night consistently with less work and understanding the sales process behind being an entertainer.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot to info. I do have one question. Well, a few questions about what you just said. Let's go back to, you said like a house mom. Like, I've heard, this is just from my outside looking in, that it's a lot of trickery that goes on between people who are really supportive of you and people who, like, you know, there's a lot of competition amongst the ranks that makes it difficult for one to really learn their own trade, you know, just try to better themselves, because everybody is out for self and some of them aren't really friends. You know, you're laughing because
because that's in any sales job. I mean, when it comes down to it, there's going to be a salesperson that is the top salesperson, and then there's going to be a few at the bottom when it comes to that tier. But often it depends really on the style of the club. I've worked in lots of clubs that were gown required and that were really about the allure of being an entertainer. So they wanted you to be more covered. Whereas I go to clubs now and the girls are literally in a bikini. So there's nothing to strip off. So there's nothing, there's no allure. I get it, you have a beautiful body, but can you at least play with the idea of the tease? Because that's the idea of why this industry was pretty much formulated. I believe that the lack of proper guidance with management and like a person like a house mom is literally what let the girls be guided by the regulars. And the regulars were guys who were there hanging at the bar, maybe having a beer or two, maybe spending 20, 25 bucks total for the night, but making the rules as they went along because they were there the longest. The girls tended to get a little closer to them and now they're learning behaviors from the regulars. So now they're creating the type of dancers that they're wanting, and the clubs are pretty much just lazily not needing to hire anyone else. I've been to clubs where there were 13 people you needed to pay in order to leave for the night. And that became a little ridiculous as well. So the idea even of independent contractor was literally up and above most of these women's heads and pay grade because they didn't know what they were owed or what they were even allowed. So there's no job training, there's no guidance, there's no management. And then there's all this misguidance by the crowd. And in itself, yes, they are being entertained, they're getting what they want. Meanwhile, the girls are struggling just to make ends meet because they don't understand that the value of their dollar just deflated. You gotta remember also, over, 40 years, the lap dance has been the exact same price. So that hasn't changed. When every other price has changed, girls are still getting the exact same amount for that service. So clubs haven't invested in the girls. They don't invest in their own clubs with proper staff. And then you end up getting a bunch of people in bikinis twerking, watching their Instagram all night on stage. And that's unfortunate.
I know it's different between like certain clubs out here in LA, for at least between the ones that are completely nude and that go completely nude and the ones that just go down to only being topless. Because I've noticed that they have different, they go into it with different mentalities for how they dance themselves, stuff that they wear when they are stripping. And, you know, just the entire art form of making it a show rather than I'm just getting naked for you, you know? Right. And, you know, some do need to learn how to share and express themselves more as far as the art form of it, rather than like, you know, hey, here's my titties, you know? Or whatever, you know?
Which is why I think the art of burlesque is coming back so strongly, because people truly desire that form. They do want the art of the tease being more of the allure rather than the act of sex. So whereas girls are just exposing themselves and just the end, there's a lot more to offer when you're having somewhat of an allure of the tease, because not only are you sharing that I'm making you watch me, you're also not feeling so bad about what you're watching. You're feeling like you're very much involved in this act. And it's totally different than just touching your genitalia and just saying, yes, I'm rubbing my body. Yes, this is sexy. That is not a show. It has to have some sense of formality to it. Even the idea of the music behind it should suggest what the movement is when it comes to showcasing your art.
I think that's one big thing he would need to work on is the music they choose to. Because it, like, Don't get me wrong, I understand that some people want to pick, you know, popular songs, but
sometimes the songs just, are just not dancing.
It doesn't fit.
No.
It's
no,
like,
there
no,
should literally be a genre for strip clubs where you have, you know, hip hop, R&B, rock, all types of genres of music, but that are specified more to the clubs. So it kind of flows with the idea of sex appeal, because yeah. It does kind of lose it when there's like so much raunchiness in it, or if there's just the suggestion that's just in your face and it's too brutal. That's mm-hmm. not what I want to hear when I'm in any facility.
Yeah, because I know, as I've been going off for like the last time I've been to one, which was like 2 months ago. And like, I'm sitting there because my friend drugged me out there.
Is that what happened? Drugged you out there, huh?
Yeah, I was
drugged you out to the strip joint. Hmm?
Yes.
Drugged.
I was not that they gave me physical drug, but like they just persuaded me into coming there.
Oh, I'm sure
to see them dance. So, yeah, the majority of times that I've been to strip clubs has been someone who I've known that was stripping, besides the ones that I've done events at when I'm not working at one. But when I'm going there by myself, or like when I'm going there not getting paid to be there, the majority of the time someone said, "Hey, Raw, come with me because I'm about to strip," or "Hey, Raw, come out here and watch me." And so I go there like, and
check that out.
Huh?
You're like, let me go check that out.
I mean, what else am I going to do? Like, the thing is, it's like some of them are very fantastic with what they do. Some of them take the art seriously. Because for me, I love the act of seeing someone who has great pole work, you know? Because some girls ignore the pole completely. They literally
It's not that they're ignoring it. It's very intimidating.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
What I'm trying to say is they don't touch it. They go around it. They touch it, walk around it once. Walk around it. I'm not saying going up it, doing like, you know, aerial tricks. They walk around it like, oh, this is a pole. And they walk away from it. And they never touch it again. And it's like, you know, for me,
do you know how hard it is to mess yourself up?
Yes, I do.
I mean, how easy it is to mess yourself up?
I do. I know. I've seen the video.
I'm like supposed to be buff, and I'm like, oh, this is, I don't know how these ladies do this all night.
It would be very nice if clubs would hire like studios like myself to consult and come by with training and lessons for pretty much stage presence and all of the above that would be required to work there. They don't have on-the-job training. There's no one to help any of these performers learn what they're doing. They're learning based on what they see, or jealously, they're watching and enviously trying to be like someone else that they might potentially want to rob. So the mindset is, I want to make money, I want to be as good as her, but no one taught me how to do this job. So where do you start? Do you start from the part of desperation you're already at because you're there trying to figure out how do I make this specific goal to get out of this situation or to start this business or to whatever your goal can be? Where does it become that point where it's desperate? And you'll either choose to compromise your morals, because you're going to see it everywhere. Yep. You're going to think it's okay.
And that's another thing too. It's kind of like, you know, there are some who take the art seriously and some people who, you know, step outside of what they should be doing, I'm going to say, and make it about, like you said earlier, you're in the champagne room the entire time and you're not doing sexual favors. And some see it as they feel that they're required to do it, you know? And that's not true, you know?
Well, you gotta also remember that within these last 20 years, we've been depicted all these images of what strippers were. and they were very much on the borderline of just going to being prostitutes.
Yeah.
They glorified movies like Pretty Woman. They play overly and on air anyone who mentions anything about their genitalia. And I guess, I mean, we're at that stage of, you know, evolution, but in the clubs, the allure has gone. And it's unfortunate because no one knows that's what they're supposed to be doing.
I was told no sex in the chat thing. No,
no, so
you're right.
It sounds like what you are trying to do is like make these dancers realize that like they're each an individual like business. And if they're a high value business, then they should like start to do things to like maximize their potential. Like you say, you're in the champagne room, like they could be there too. Like instead of being like, we're low and I got to do this to get this so I can get these customers from this girl. Like if you focus on your kind of self and maximizing your thing, you won't have to worry about what the other girls are doing and you'll be able to get out of your situation instead of
right. Eventually. You gotta also too remember that this is a social science.
Mm-hmm.
There's dancers that won't even give you eye contact. And that goes to say a lot about them inside. They have a huge fear of rejection and they're gonna already hear it without even having to put it out there. So if they don't want to be rejected, they're going to sell you something that is too good to be true. Something that they shouldn't. They don't understand how the build up to that, because women don't understand really how to approach men in that sense. Most of it comes from the fear of this cancel culture, I guess, where men feel I can't say this or it's inappropriate, but now there's no true test of understanding how to get hit on. You don't know when someone's hitting on you versus when you're being disrespected. And it doesn't make any sense. If you're a beautiful woman and a man is initially catcalling, there's a way to take that as a lady without putting everyone out there. I've seen ridiculous outcomes from that, but there is a way as a lady to be able to accept that or negate that properly. Mm-hmm. What I see happening is that no one understands that. And they're taking it way too personally and offensively. Mm-hmm. And so if they're not physically attracted to someone, they don't know how to speak to them. So when they're going to a man in a club and just asking him how they're doing or whatever to get their attention, they're not doing it from a genuine place. They're doing it from a, let's make a sale. I've got 45 seconds for this guy to say yes. And often they're not even looking at them. They're scaling the room. They're kind of paying attention, but you can see that it's a tactic that's totally not working. Mm-hmm. But often, you know, their boobs are out there. They're thinking you're only watching, you know, their physical bodies. You're not really paying attention to the body language. And often if men haven't had enough to drink, they're gonna pay attention. So girls are getting distracted and feeling rejected way too soon. And then they get depressed way too early in the night and the energy to be a performer is gone. Now they just wanna whatever to make $50, to make house fees, to make tip outs. And it's no longer a sales, it's now survival. Mm-hmm. And it's not working.
I mean, I've been to ones that don't even take the effort to, you know, sit down and say that. I've been to ones who would just literally, it's like they just came on the floor and they walk by, you look at you, you want to dance? And that's all they say. It's like, well, say hello to me first before you just say, you want to dance? Like, oh, wait a minute, I'm still sober now. Wait a second. I don't drink. So I notice everything like at clubs compared to when I did drink. Back in the day when I went to certain clubs, is a different, you notice different things. As you just said, being sober and being drunk as a consumer, you know, looking to, you know, to give someone funds, you know, to like get a dance or watch someone dance, you know. It's just, you just notice different things, as right. You just said. So I understand that. But it's like some people don't, some girls don't even put in the effort to, you know, to talk.
Well, they don't understand the tact of their job. And you have to put that once again on management. You hire girls based on what they look like, but you don't tell them what their job title is. You say you're a dancer, you want them there this many days, you want to make sure that they're on time, they're not on drugs, all of these things, but you don't tell them, we have customers, this is how you approach them. This is what you say, this is what you don't. No one does that.
I mean, some don't even care if you're on drugs or not.
I mean, a form of medication is a drug anyway.
I mean, you're supposed to, you know, I'm not gonna get too deep into that, but you know, some just don't care if someone is really drugged out or not, whether they're on the floor. They just put them out there.
Say that for the sake of liability, they have to. Because when you do touch that pole, you have legal representation saying, okay, this girl signed this, that she doesn't do any of this and she doesn't take her medication when she's drinking, and you already signed away that, you know, you're liable. Yeah. So there's no way to sue them. There's no way to, you know, gain any severance from anything. You're independent.
And it sucks too, because like I seen the video from a while, from 2 years ago, of the girl who really hurt herself on the pole. And that was scary.
Well, the advent of the internet has given her amazing opportunity to recoup all of that. Because as soon as that video went out from a customer, there was all this money coming into her GoFundMe. And now she doesn't have to work anymore.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, how often does that happen? Not to that severity.
You have that repercussion. The club's going to have to either take responsibility or change rules up. Like how, what is it called? OnlyFans did. Then they listened, and then they once again changed the rules. So you have to meet.
No, they got scared. They got scared because they're going to lose some money. They just ain't all that money. That was our episode last week, talking about OnlyFans, because like it had just happened that morning. And that was our entire podcast about that.
I told you wait and see.
And then right after it was like, you know what? We about to lose millions of dollars. Let's switch it back. And they were blaming the credit card companies, and to an extent, yeah, but they left it open ended to saying they can do it again. So it's like, it's still like an abusive relationship. So.
Well, when it comes to legally being able to sell, I guess, any independent property or anything like that online, there are certain guidelines. Like, I guess most of the online platforms that allow for adult facilitation of any source, they will either take a 30% cut or something where they kind of like avoid federal, the same way that the dispensaries do. When you can't use your credit card, MasterCard, I guess, was involved with the whole OnlyFans thing here that they had to change.
You can buy marijuana out here with credit card.
Only a few dispensaries, and those are the ones that are completely like fully regulated.
Right.
Yeah.
Mind you, it's still very new here on the East Coast.
Because the only reason I know it, because like I think I purchased some for this gentleman before with a credit card.
Oh, where?
I don't remember.
Oh, it's a gift card. I don't think you can purchase that with a credit card either.
Like I know out here you can purchase a credit card. I use my MasterCard for it. We have this, I don't know if they have it out where you're at, but we have this thing called weed maps. And on there it tells you which ones take credit card.
Well, so yeah, most of like the thing is about out here is like most of the dispensaries actually are like on this weird, like, hey, we fill out the paperwork and we can operate while they're processing it. And they kind of do all these weird extensions because they need a certain amount of capital. And then they just kind of close and open up somewhere else. So they're always kind of in a gray area. So most of them take just cash, but he probably goes to the ones that charge taxes and all that stuff.
And you might be paying with an actual debit card, not an actual credit card, because they have to have certain fees that they can't be able to take from a credit card.
There, like the one I use is a credit, because I use my Capital. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
Another
I don't
good
know if
reason to move to LA.
Yes.
I mean, that's one reason, but like it's. If you're happy on that East Coast, y'all get snow. I can't do snow anymore. But
you said you don't do Florida and Georgia. They don't get snow.
Well, I don't do Florida because Florida people have issues.
Can't blame the whole state for the issues.
You said it rains too much.
I lived there 2 years. I gave it a try.
North, South?
I was in South Florida. I was in Miami. I was in Fort Lauderdale. I was in Fort Lauderdale and I lived in Pompano Beach. I lived in those two areas. And both times, like, you know, within I was in a okay area. And within those first 4 or 5 months, someone stole my tires. Then I have never been in a state where somebody will come to your car, scratch off your sticker that says your new year. Like, you know, when you put the O, like, this is 2022. So, smart, if I have a 2022 in my car right now, someone will come up, scrape off the 2022, take it off my car, put it on theirs, and just leave. That happened in Florida. I have never experienced that. I was like, when I noticed it, I'm like, I'm dumbfounded about, like,
what to do.
That it was new to me.
What did you learn to put your sticker on the inside of the window?
It was the back plates.
Well, you got to do the little X marks on it so it can't, if they try to pull off, comes apart.
Well, yeah, I learned, like, I do that more so now. I've been driving.
It's everywhere. Everywhere.
I've had an automobile since 2003, and this happened in 2015. So in the 12 years of driving at that time, like, you know, I do it sometimes, and sometimes I didn't. I didn't think much about it because that have never happened to me before, and I'm like. And I've had interactions with the law pulling out weapons on me more in Florida than anywhere else too. So it's like Florida and me just didn't mix. And then I don't like the rain. It rains every day. So I like a state with just heat and no weather. Just give me heat. And that's what California does. It doesn't rain. It doesn't snow really over here. Like, it really rains. It doesn't snow in my area. It gets cold, and that's it. That's all we get.
The forest fires to keep you warm.
And I've had to evacuate because of one. And I ended up on CW's couch for a week.
Damn. Yeah, because.
Huh?
And he's in a closet.
Well, no, he runs a gym, and he's in the attic of the gym right now. So, no, but this is a few years ago, and I was on this couch because I was scared that my house was gonna burn down, and the only thing I brought out was my computer. I can't lose my computer files. And I was in a full neck brace. So that's just a fun experience.
So do you have like an evacuation kit in your car ready?
Well, now, no. The thing is, now where I live at, because I moved, because I used to live in the mountains. And where I lived in the mountains, like it was prone to it because it's so dry over there, you know. And where I live at now, I'm less likely, like I have a 0% chance of being in one of those fires, you know. Like I'm not even in a flood area anymore. So it's like I moved to a location where it's quiet. I don't gotta deal with humans that I don't want to deal with. And it's perfect over here now, you know, compared to, and then I'm by myself now. I had a roommate situation before. So it's kind of like, I don't gotta deal with another human in the house. I have free reign to, you know, throw parties if I want to. And CW, you're muted by the way. And yeah.
So you live in the middle of nowhere where nobody knows, with a bunch of animals that you want to have a party with?
No, I mean like, no. Where I used to live, I had animals. I moved in the middle, like, because CW knows where I live right now. It's like out the way. Like you're not coming to.
It's not really out the way. It's just out the way from. Well.
Yeah. Me. Out the way.
Out the way.
He said it's not out. It's not really out the way. It's just out the way. Out the way. You don't know.
Can
you
order food? Like yeah, I mean like there's definitely like people in like a I don't know. It's just like yeah, it seems out the way. Yeah, you're right.
Where I lived at before, there were certain places that would not deliver to my house because it was too far out the way. And I would have to come down, which was like 6 minutes in a car to come down the front way, and it was like 5 minutes the back way to get out of the area that I was at, to get all the way to the main street. And I love that, but it was just like bad for cell phone reception.
And you know, fires.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Me having to evacuate in that year. I had to be in your couch for a week. So, but I forget where we were going with this, but yeah.
California sounds like an amazing place to live.
No, I love California. It's like, you know, you have your events out here. If you have some friends, it's very subtle and you got good weather and you're more than likely not to get rained on like you will in certain states. And you don't get snow. I'm from Indiana. I grew up with all the weathers. I don't want to go back to all the weathers.
So, I don't know. Sometimes it's just something about the four seasons that just make you feel like you're really experiencing a year. I can't just have one season or two seasons and feel like, oh yeah, my whole year was gone. I lived in Arizona and I couldn't take it.
See, I know he lived in Arizona too.
Here I'm like, oh man, it's, I'm like, oh, damn, that was 2 years ago. Yeah, you don't really, you get a weird sense of time out here
right. When
it's always sunny.
See, I'm okay with two seasons. Give me spring and give me summer.
I mean, I'm really into that too. I could actually live all, it could be all summer.
Something amazing about fall. Fall in New England is badass.
Yeah, I bet it's pretty. Like, here it's just brown.
See, I've been to, because I know it's the weather-wise, it's supposed to be worse in the Northeast during the winter time. And I know that I've been to New York during winter and we got all three weathers that weekend I was there. I normally would only go in the warm months, but I was there in January and it rained the first day. It was like just really, really chilly the second day. And then it snowed the last day I was there. And I'm like, this old bipolar, weird old weather. And
that's called progression.
they could have kept on that request because I was only thing I had to do when I was there was jump on the train, and I didn't know nothing where I was going, and then I was with a few female friends of mine, and all they wanted to do was walk around Soho and shop the entire time. So here I am, just walking in the snow with them, my happy little self, and just freezing, you know. And they were just enjoying it, and I'm like, I'm over here dying, and y'all just really chipper now, aren't y'all?
Shopping so. Makes you warm.
I fell asleep in a store waiting for them.
Wow. I've never been to the East Coast.
I literally sat in the back of a store, just chilling back with their bags, and fell asleep. And we were in there for a good hour and 20 minutes. And I don't even know if they bought anything in that store. I just know I fell asleep. I'm sorry. Huge digression.
Beautiful about autumn. You get all those beautiful shades of brown.
I like the brown.
Sprinkles of yellows, orange, and all those beautiful shades of fall. Everything goes together.
It's more so I just don't like the coldness that comes with it. Like, I don't like the fact that, you know, we can get icy trails and stuff like that. And that's why if I go visit home, I only go during the summer months, because I don't want to be there with, you know, ice on the ground, you know. I don't want to slide and hit somebody, you know.
It doesn't stay that way, you know. People could salt the ice and it.
People are supposed to salt the ice. They're supposed to have trucks come out and salt the ice. And then trucks are like, you know, we'll do it eventually.
Sound very upset.
Yes. I've slid across a street before because it was black ice. And I just slide like slow. I was going probably like 10. And then I just slid all the way across the street. Sideways, and it's like, you know, I can't do this, so I guess I'm bitter. Yes, yeah, I've fallen in the snow, I've fallen
weather that I don't have I to have deal slid. With.
I used to be a teacher, and I had to clean off my car at like 6 a.m. just so I can get to the classroom and pretend I'm chipper in front of kids after
Brian I've had before.
Could have easily paid one of those kids to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know them kids. We were like
entrepreneurship, man.
You're the teacher.
Yeah.
This was at the where I lived at, though. So like in that area, it was, and this is no disrespect, we're just a whole bunch of old people. And I was saying my auntie because I was
You did, I mean, nah, you didn't have any bums? There's no bums you can pay?
Oh, not in that area, no. My auntie got money, I don't.
Servants.
No, my auntie lives in an area where it's just a whole bunch of old people.
Oh, but
it's
yeah, really nice house.
Yeah, she's a really, out the way. So, like, I had to come out, you know, and clean it and get there. And then, like, yeah.
So I have a question. I don't think we covered it yet. So, okay. At what point in your career, I guess, in this industry where you're like, when you had your like aha moment, because you see like, it's like you're trying to educate these girls, and I imagine like, I don't know if you already came into it like, hey, I see what's happening here. Or was there a moment for yourself where you're like, wait, this is how this really works, and I should be doing this way.
It honestly started by accident. We were having a conversation in the dressing room, and one of the girls said, we should record this. Could you say that over again? And I just started talking to them about what entertaining means and how to get a yes in the bottom of the sale, almost like the art of the sales. I had a conversation that lasted a little too long where we did get reprimanded because a couple girls missed stage sets and it was all types of chaos. But I'm not sure if that was my aha moment because I was slowly writing my book, but I thought at the time when I was writing it would be more of a memoir. It became more of a self-guide how-to based on that conversation. And okay. It slowly became something where every shift we would have these little symposiums in the dressing room.
Oh, so like kind of like a, like kind of bringing all the things that were like actually working together, like into a system, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, we're talking about what the club was missing and how everyone's jobs could be a little easier. First, it started with the lack of advertising because the clubs stopped using magazines and they don't really advertise through social media. And they, I think it's blocked on a lot of firewalls for sending specific emails or any sort of email marketing or even like postcard marketing. You can't really do that if you're in this industry. You kind of have to do a real targeted marketing system for the club, but they weren't doing anything. They were literally relying on the girls and their word of mouth. And a lot of the girls started to become a little popular online, especially Twitter. And they get a lot of followers that would eventually come and follow them and come to the club. But it was becoming a little dangerous because now these customers think that these girls are their private entertainers that they have access to. And when the girls were leaving the clubs, they were getting stalked. And a couple were assaulted, and I think a few even were murdered. So there were, it was starting to get really dangerous on the girls doing all the work. So what was left? And it was a complaint that kind of got out of hand. We first started to talk about what needed to be done, and then contracts came out where things were changed and the clubs wanted the girls to all sign that they wouldn't sue them. We found out that they were illegally charging. So they weren't really paying a salary to any of their staff. They were relying on all the girls to pay the staff. And often the girls weren't able to meet those requirements, especially if they didn't have a set schedule or if life just got in the way where they weren't able to meet the standard of the club. So the clubs were kind of like pimping out the girls and to a point where they couldn't afford to work there. So they started to stand up for themselves and slowly understand what their true jobs were. And then things started changing. Unfortunately, this was like in 2008. So it took a while before things to kind of like start moving forward really. And in about 2016, things started to look like it was going to get a little better, but then the desperation came where some other additional hidden charges were made, and then there was some people that needed to be paid off, or something happened where I'm sure the club needed more money, but they didn't know how to go about earning it. So there was a few discrepancies there when they put the girls on the books and they were paying each girl a salary. But then of course, when you get paid a salary, there are certain things that you do have to do, like certain shifts you have to cover, certain stipulations that the clubs had, but often it wasn't able to be met because no one worked in a club able to work a full-time job. Often 4 days a week was kind of like the major mandate for any girl to be able to work any club, especially if she was a student or a mom. But they were making it impossible where the girls didn't even have the ability to pay for their childcare. I'm just saying it was like upward about $1,200 to $1,500 a night from each girl that was being paid out in fees.
Ooh, wow.
So, yeah, so, it really sounds like some pimping, like
what they ended up doing
keep a girl
to
broke.
Meet that requirement is they changed their prices. So they would have they would have a notice to let the customers know what the prices are for the services, like the champagne room or the dances or whatever. But they would convince the dancers to change the prices so the girls would make more money and they can still make whatever fees that they were going to get tonight anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a lot of shaky business practices happening when it came to that, where girls just said, you know what, I'm over it, I'm through. And I know a lot of girls decided to say, I'm just going to do my own thing. And they started doing things online. Mm. But even with that, you need to have somewhat of a business plan and an exit strategy too.
True.
That's a scary situation because in general, like, if you are a stripper, as you said, you get stalkers and stuff, but then you always go to the fact that if you are that and you do have a social media presence, and then you ever decide to quit, you have the fact that, you know, some men may not accept that. And they figure that once you start this, this is your forever life. And, you know, they don't understand that, you know, while you are dancing, you are, you know, you are diamond, whatever. But then when you go home, you're Allegra, you know, you're you who you are.
Another,
you know,
stripper name.
Allegra.
I have Allegra. I have five friends.
Allegra.
I have five friends who their real name is Allegra.
Allegra.
Their stripper's name.
No, that's wow. that's their real name. I know a few girls who their real name is Allegra.
Sorry, Allegras.
And it just popped in my brain. That was the first time. That was the first time. But I do have a few friends.
They're, like they're medicine.
Their government name. Well, I have some Aleve right here. So when I was trying to think of a name, instead of saying Aleve, Allegra came up. So, but you know what I mean. It's like when you're home, you're not this person, and people forever have a hard understanding to separate the fantasy that you're giving, the entertainment you're given, you know, the show you are given, from, you know, reality, you know. And that's one of the hazards of, you know, working in, you know, in the industry, in that industry, mainly because, you know, you're physically there and you do get a chance to leave, but you have the security who occasionally, you know, they walk you to your car, make sure you get there. But after that, you're on your own, you know? And that's scary because of what some people may or perceive or may try to do, which is a really scary situation at the end of the day. So.
Right. And then there's a lot of girls who don't know when to say no. They don't know how to properly say no to anything. So they're promising things that are unable to be met, and you're making people feel that they really do have that access to you and that what you said to them was true. And they're gonna assume that whatever you said, that they will be able to continue outside of the club.
Especially if they're drunk.
Yeah, it's really hard to have that separation of life and lifestyle, because a lot of dancers still have a dancer lifestyle. They don't have a businesswoman lifestyle. And so most of that activity that's at night isn't the same in the daytime. I preferred the daytime because a lot of the people who come there know that they're there to have a good time and go. The unfortunate thing that a lot of people have been taken advantage of with the clubs is the time of the dancers, that they are there for that 8-hour shift in those 8-inch heels, having to work and dance 30 minutes every hour. So only 30 minutes do they have out of that hour to make any sales. And if they're not taking time to properly make those sales, that means they have to go right back out on the floor and try to wrangle up sales. So the customers who tend to waste dancers' times or come there thinking that they're there to build a romantic relationship or build some camaraderie that is illicit, that's what makes it really hard for dancers to do their job and just be dancers. So they have to be bullshit artists, for lack of a better word. And it's unfortunate that they don't need to do that, but they think that's the only way to handle without saying the word no. So they can't really dish out the rejection or even take it. So there's another little debacle. Here's my list. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the people you pay in a strip club. You pay your house fee. If they have one, you pay your house mom, your VIP bouncer, your bouncer for the couch dances, your funny money hostess, your front door hostess, your front door bouncer, your valet guy, your VIP waitress, your money wrangler, your bartenders, and your DJ.
Jesus Christ.
Shit, that's a lot of people to pay.
Yes. And not enough people paying the dancers for them to afford them.
Like,
and most of the services aren't even being met.
And then I sometimes
I'm like, that sounds like, but like,
and then sometimes I see
women strippers. People you just walk by.
And all sometimes you don't pay I see when, cook.
And then sometimes I see times where, you know, performers are throwing money up there for their fellow strippers, and right. like you know, and that's money out of there from them going back to someone else, whatever. And it makes it a little bit harder for them because, you know, they gotta pay all those dues. That's ridiculous. I didn't know they had to pay so much.
That's a lot.
Jesus. So when there is that camaraderie and the sisterhood in the club and the girls are supporting one another, that's beautiful. That's amazing. It goes to show that they're all kind of dealing with the same type of customers. People who aren't giving them the benefit of them being there. So they have to show some sort of appreciation to one another. It was plenty of times I was on the stage 6-7 hours the whole night, just dancing on the middle stage. That was my job.
One thing that I do, I've said this before on past podcasts. One thing that I do hate is the fact that you have dudes at the clubs I've worked at before. Where they sit just far enough back that they can see everything and they can enjoy it, but they never go down to the actual stage and tip anything.
That's they literally just sit rude.
Huh?
That is so rude.
Yeah, and like I'm like, you know, I understand you want entertainment. And I understand that, like, depending on the club, you might have paid a fee to get in. But that doesn't entitle you, you entitled prick, to sit back and just enjoy whatever without giving them something or tipping them something for what you are enjoying, you know? You know, like, they're putting their time inside of to do this. And especially if the club is, you know, not crowded. So you're sitting there and it's like, and for some reason, some clubs put a lot of girls on stage when it's the club is empty, whatever. And you sit in the back and they can see you sitting back, watching whatever, getting your jollies off. And you're not going to take your time out to, you know, like even if you are broke, like, I always say this. If you
I'm a fan of if you're broke, don't go.
Yeah, like honestly,
a place
if,
where you're
if you're not going to a strip club without the mentality of dropping, and I'm gonna say bare minimum 20, you should drop more than that. But if you're not gonna at least drop that much, don't go. You know. And like 20 isn't a lot, but I'm just saying, like at least you're contributing something, you know? And if you're there for hours, you know, and I mean hours, and all you drop is 20, I'm sorry. I'm gonna get upset.
You're really upset?
It irritates me because like I notice it more just from doing the work I've done in strip clubs sometimes, because I see people who sit back, they'll buy a hookah and they'll just sit back and just watch the entire time while they smoke a hookah.
And it's, and like, you watch them and be like, I don't like that shit. I don't like that shit at all.
It really
his average in a strip club should be $200 for his evening.
Boom.
If you're there for 3 hours or more, you need to spend a minimum of $200 to be there. You're going to be spending it in the drinks. You should have money to tip anybody who comes over and gives you the attention, because tipping stands for to ensure proficiency, and everybody's being proficient. Everyone is showing you their bodies and giving you a good jolly from wherever you are. Mm-hmm. So if you're between 6 and 15 feet away from that stage, every girl should at least get $2 from you every time.
Okay. I have no issue with that.
So next time you go, Rockstar.
Every time.
$200.
I don't, once again, 90% of the time I go to a strip club is because I'm doing an event, and I'm already paying. I'm personally paying the person to be there. So I'm paying for. I think it's like whenever I go to strip club now, I was doing these oral wrestling competitions, and so we pay the. We had two of the other girls who actually worked there wrestle, and I pay them directly. And then I have two headliners, and I pay them directly. You know, then like whatever money that they make while they're doing that, they get to keep all of that.
Okay? Aren't you so generous?
So
they get to keep all of that.
I mean, I don't know what, like, the thing is,
I'm just messing with you, man.
The thing is, like, I don't know what they're going to make. I've seen times where, they, like, the oil wrestling thing lasts, like, I want to say, like, 15 minutes in total. Three rounds for, like, it's not that long. And I've seen girls split, like, the very first time I did this, I think each girl split, like, 1,500. I
mean, they got 200.
15 apiece.
Oh, that's pretty good. That this $200 thing makes perfect sense. I don't know why it makes, when you said that, I was like, that makes That's fair.
It's not that bad, you know? And that's what I'm saying. Like, it just pisses me off when people sit way in the back and they just feel like they don't gotta give nothing, you know? And it just, I don't know, it bothers. I think
that kind of goes into the whole thing, like what you're saying, Holly, about, like, I guess kind of the, I don't want to, looking for words, like the vibration of the club. Like, if the dancers see themselves as like money makers, like they're worth this amount of money, then they'll start to bring in that amount of money instead of like kind of debasing themselves for less because they're kind of desperate.
Right. But dancers shouldn't be in the position of being self-marketers. The same way they shouldn't be their own bouncers. And
true.
I mean, that's the purpose of the club, so that those things are taken care of for them.
Exactly.
So one of the qualities that should be assured when you're working in a club is that they're quality clientele to work with, not just whoever I get on my Instagram that possibly can come by.
Yeah. And it should, like, I understand that, like, you know, everything is, you know, marketing in general. And the fact that, like, the most I see some of these strip clubs do out here is they have the billboards and that's it, you know? And many of the clubs I went to, like, that aren't on the, on like that main street are like way in the back corner somewhere. And if you are just someone who aren't from the area and you're looking for one, it's not one that you would think would be a good club to be at, you know? And so it takes a lot.
Most clubs are fairly in an either industrial area or commercial area that's not school zoned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know that for the sake of safety
I mean, I know that, but I mean, like for example, if you are in North Hollywood, for example, and you go down Lancashire, it is three strip clubs on that street, you know, that I could think of right off, you know.
It's in the very ambiguous, like you can't really like, hey, there's the strip club, like in other places. Like in Indiana, it's like showgirls. And you're like that.
Like on Bourbon Street, when you go to Louisiana, there's like four of them right next to each other, right across from another and right next to each other.
Yeah, so. I just
yeah, like in here, you can walk, you don't even know it's there.
I just feel that it needs to be.
Which is weird.
Easily accessed for some clubs. Because I feel that they'll make more money. And I feel that, like, if you are making people paid to do this and this and this, whatever, you gotta.
The club should never be about accessibility. They should be about exclusivity.
What I mean is like, I'm talking about people who are bouncers or people who let you in, being a-holes before you get in the club. That's what I'm referring to.
That's the thing. You gotta kind of.
You're supposed to have an experience. An experience, even in a club, supposed to make you feel like either you're one of us or you're not.
And that's what I mean. And I mean, some people before you get in, they just make you not want to be there. As far as like the bouncers or the person at the check-in, when you pay to get in and stuff like that, some of them have. When I've gone by myself, some of them have just been very. Been a-holes. And it's like, do I even want to be here? You know? Just from like that, the people outside. But I do want to touch on something.
You're
really
probably
quick.
Looking at you like he's gonna only spend $20.
I said 20 is because I know those people who sit in the back and don't give anything. And like if I go to a club, I'm at least and I'm going by myself and I'm not working. I at least pay for at least a dance or two, you know. You know, I'm not just going there, you know, just to squat, you know. So that's me. And I always, you know, tip people, whatever. And especially if I see someone dancing and nobody is tipping them, you know. Even if I'm not interested in that person, I walk up and I throw something on the stage is because
no dancer wants to feel like a charity case either. You're either there to take care of us or go home.
Well, I mean, like there are certain people who dance, you know, who are, like I feel like in my personal opinion, who you know, I probably would give more to because of the show is more entertaining to me. And then there's some, as I said earlier, who just walk around the pole and then that's all they do. And it's not a show. It's just like, I'm just getting naked, you know? And because for me, since I do stuff in porn sometimes, I'm used to seeing people just get naked, whatever. But if I go to a strip club, I want the tease. I want the entertainment. I want to say, you are doing a fantastic job. This, and I'll throw money on stage, you know? And
have you
like,
been to the club when the Rainmakers are there?
What is that? I don't even know what it is.
You know, the dollar wars, they come by and they just throw dollars because they want to seem more important than them?
No.
So you never been in a Rainmaker party?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So there's not many of those either. But all the girls could make money and we're all happy.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody kind of understood that there's a symbiotic relationship, then there wouldn't be any sense of boredom or staleness in an adult establishment as beautiful and exciting as a strip club.
I feel it.
It's a magic world.
and because we've been on for a while, there's a few things that I do want to touch on before we do the part. Your pole dancing, how could somebody, if they were interested in doing, like taking one of your classes, how would they go about that?
It'd be nice if they were local to Connecticut so they can come and take classes every day. But if you are as far as you are, Rockstar in LA, I would suggest signing up for my Patreon because I do a lot of classes on that. I've been trying to convince my instructors to get in that direction too, because we're trying to stray away from the sites that are obvious catered to the adult entertainment industry for more illicit services. I create art, I dance, I make music. I pretty much stay really involved in anything that's crafty. That's kind of my appeal. That's kind of my niche. So my dancing style is best experienced personally.
Well, because like I said earlier, like I really like, for me personally, there's been a lot of people who I've seen get on a pole, and you don't even gotta get naked, who just are very, very skilled on everything they do with it. And you know, that makes me more happy and interested than seeing people naked sometimes, because of this other time and effort. And I know that they took time to learn their craft. They take care of themselves, because that is so much upper body strength. Like, you know, just to even hold yourself up for a second, that is so much upper body strength. And you know, I know core. Personally that's that, sexy. Huh?
Strong core, that's sexy.
Like, yes, that excites me more than seeing someone get naked, you know? And that's why I love, like, I really, 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 really love that. Because like, we've had someone on who used to be an aerialist. And, like, she sent me a video of her doing that aerialist stuff. And when like, she's working the pole. And I'm like, wow. Like, that is amazing. And she was clothed the entire time. And I'm like, that excites me, you know?
That's pretty much what I have at my studio.
And get
hoops, silks, poles. Let me give you a little.
See.
So on this end, up here, we have our hoops.
See, I love stuff like that. Like, that makes me, like, you see the smile. That, like, that's fun for me to watch. I love to see that.
This side was where all the poles are.
Okay,
there we go. I have one silk hanging up here. You see that fabric right there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's okay. A silk. Usually have that hanging. Kind of get a view of the space this way.
See, I know the only thing with the silk is, like, that's the only one that scares me a little more when I see someone do it, because I'm enjoying the art, but I'm scared for them to fall.
With the fabric?
No, like, because, like, I don't know if it's just my mentality of me overthinking it, but when I see someone on a fabric compared to on a pole or something like that, or like a ring, in my brain somewhere, it feels like I'm more scared that they will, in the back of it, like it's a little harder to do, they might fall. Like it's a little, yeah, compared to the other two.
Well, honestly, there's more of a chance to fall on the pole than it would be on a silk, because your silk is teaching you not rope techniques. Almost like the Eagle Scouts, the Boy Scouts, how they teach mm-hmm. all those different knots. You're learning how to use your body to knot against the rope. So you're locking into the fabric. Mm-hmm. So if you ever seen those like Chinese finger cuffs that we put your fingers in and when you pull them out, they get tighter. That's what you're doing with your body. You're elongating and locking your body into the fabric.
Okay.
It takes a lot more flexibility to do the lira, because it's a beautiful apparatus. But I believe the pole would be the most dangerous comparatively, because the pole is the only one that is self-moving.
Yeah.
All the other apparatus, you have to move.
You know, I didn't know until much later that the pole turns. I always thought it was stationary. And like, there
are plenty of poles that are stationary. And in competition, we have both. One spinning, one stationary, so you can compete on both.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, because I literally, like, when I was younger, I thought it was only stationary. And like, I still find it amazing no matter what. But I'm like, okay, that makes it a little bit easier for them to do, but it's still fantastic.
Right.
You know, because I'm like, how are you doing? Like, I'm sorry. I just love the art. I really, really love the art of actual pole dancing. Because it feels like, for a reason I said before, just how much time and effort some people who take the craft seriously put inside of it. So if you're listening out there, her stuff is going to be on this video, video on the description, whatever. Make sure you go out there and, like, if you can, if you're in Connecticut, take a class in person. If you, or she has some video options, and because, like, you know, it may take you some time to perfect it, but at the end of the day, it's going to be worth the last thing. Even if you're listening to this and you're not a stripper or you have no intention to become a stripper, the fact that you're able to do this for your mate, male or female, they'll love it. Trust me.
Or purely just for yourself.
Yeah.
Just get an amazing body. Like CW said, nice hard rock core.
And he's a personal trainer. Strong. That's all he talks about is workout. He's a personal trainer. His core is on point. My core needs work.
I don't know about it. It looks on point. It's not as strong as a lot of dancers, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
He can train you to be your best. And that's the most important.
There you go, CW.
That's true.
Work the pole, CW. You can do this.
You could always check me out, www.polecontrolstudios.com.
Okay.
Y'all hear that? Polecontrolstudios.com. Okay, and let's circle back to the book really quick. Is there anything you want to tell the audience about just in general before we do our farewells?
It's on sale. It's both in Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. You can also check out everything on HollywoodsWroteABook.com. I'd love to see any of your reviews if you've already purchased it about what you've read so far. And if you have any questions, I am totally easily to speak to.
It's like I've like everybody out there, I've really enjoyed the conversation I had with her, and I met her through Ralph Terry, who came on a few months ago, and like his excitement about me talking to her and her coming on here was extraordinary, and ever since then she's just been a joy and a pleasure. So I want everybody out there to go out and buy a book and enjoy it, you know, take one of her classes, because she had, like, from what I understand, like, she does very good work. She has people out there who really care about, you know, expanding the craft, you know, and doing a good job. And, you know, you learn so much from, you know, the hazards of the industry and, like, you know, so much about the art form. And not just, oh, this famous person has sex with this famous person at a strip club. It's not what it's about. It's about so much more, and it's so much deeper than that. And I'm guaranteeing you that every bit you read about it, you will enjoy. So real quick, Miss Woods, can you please tell everybody where they can find you?
Once again, check me out, HollywoodsWroteABook.com. You can also find it on BarnesandNobles.com and Amazon.com. It's called Nothing is Personal, It's Just Business. It gives you the secrets of the exotic entertainment business. And it is jam-packed with amazing information. I look forward to hearing all of your reviews.
Do you have any social medias you want to share with the people?
Check me out on Instagram, Hollywood's Pole World. And most of my social media is at Pole Control Studios on Facebook, Instagram. You can find both me personally and all the information about the business.
Okay, really quick, CW.
CC Fitness LA on Instagram, on Twitter also, CC Fitness on Facebook, and you can find me also at ccfitnessla.com.
Really quick, if you want to find us, we are The Urban Misfits on Instagram, BurbankMisfits.com, that says everything that we do, from fitness, training, website development, to podcast, and everything else. She has a code she's showing us right now. What's the code?
It's my link tree.
Oh, she has a link tree. She has a link tree in her book that says everything right there, and you could find all that stuff. And yeah, and you can find me, I'm Rawstar, R-A-W-S-E-A-R-R, on Instagram and on Twitter. Again, Miss Hollywoods, you are a joy, a pleasure, and a wonderful person. I really love this podcast. It was really fun, informational, and entertaining. Like,
you are... Can we come visit the East Coast in the winter?
I will come in the summer. I will come 3 to 4 seasons.
The theater opens in the winter.
Well, I have to make
it
a special
January 2022. Okay, I'll be there crying, but I'll be there. I can support. As long as it doesn't snow. I am so anti-snow. But anyway, everybody, please tune in next week, and we'll talk to you all later. Toodaloo.